This is your Day X World War III update. I got to make this one quick. The North Koreans are blowing up any passageway in between the South and the North. There's been cross-border skirmishes already reported. As a result of this, the North Koreans are severing all trade routes between the South and the North. Now, the question that people need to be asking at this point in time is, why now? What could have possibly provoked the North Koreans to go to such excessive measures? They're saying that the South were dropping propaganda leaflets and a drone violated North Korean airspace. But even that seems like an insufficient explanation in light of all of the past transgressions from either side to elicit such a severe response. Let's look at what's happened in the last 48 hours, not only on the Korean Peninsula, but more importantly, in the context of the global geopolitical chessboard, because this is what everybody needs to be paying attention to. This is a world war, and increasingly by the day, it becomes more and more of a world war as defensive pacts are signed between all of the, what we refer to here in the West as the axis of evil, right? North Korea, China, Russia, and Iran primarily. Now, in the last 48 hours, the North Koreans and the Russians have ratified a defensive strategic pact, which essentially means that when one country comes under threat or is attacked, the other country is going to come to their aid. It's essentially an Article 5 for North Korea and Russia. If the North Koreans get attacked by the South and the Americans, the Russians then are obligated to come to North Korea's aid, even if that means nuclear aid, okay? North Korea is now under the Russian nuclear umbrella, even though the North Koreans have their own nuclear weapons, and increasingly more so. The North Koreans, in the last 48 hours, in addition to blowing up these roadways, conveniently right around the same time that this defensive pact was finally officially ratified, also state, and this is according to KCNA, which is a North Korean state-run news agency, they claim that 1.4 million students have volunteered to enlist in the military. Now, whenever you say volunteer and we're talking about a communistic authoritarian society, we know exactly what that means. That means it's coming at the end of the barrel of a gun. Nonetheless, this signifies a new high point in tensions. We're talking about 10,000 artillery pieces that are currently amassed along the North Korean border that, according to the head of the North Korean military, are ready to open fire at a moment's notice. Now, we're no strangers here to hardline rhetoric with the North Koreans and the South Koreans. It's the most vociferous of any rhetoric on any battlefront and the most unprofessional and undiplomatic because, of course, while there might be an armistice with the North Koreans and the South Koreans, they're still officially in a state of war. So, of course, it's going to be incredibly belligerent talk. Nonetheless, this is a new point in hostilities. Now, let's look at the timeline of all of this. And remember, we have North Koreans fighting inside Ukraine. Allegedly, they're collecting intelligence, doing training, building military structures, and they're even saying they're building a dedicated brigade of 3,000 soldiers, 3,000 North Korean soldiers to fight on the front lines inside Ukraine. So this is a real deal strategic defensive pact. And we're about to see one of these things signed with Iran, because now you have Iranian Shahed drones and North Korean soldiers fighting in Europe. Okay? Everything is starting to come together. Now, at the same time, you have China conducting one of the biggest exercises, the biggest, bar none, exercise that simulates a blockade of Taiwan, okay, on the same day when the shit's going down with North Korea. Now, let's look at the timeline of events. We were so close to nuclear Armageddon. We were literally one storm shadow hitting Moscow away from a nuclear exchange in Europe. You remember that? Just a month ago. And we're still on the precipice of that because the jury is still out as to whether or not they're going to authorize it. Some people are saying they won't. I think they will, when the time is right. Right now, Poland is starting to become more belligerent in the conversation in the Eastern European war theater. What we've seen abruptly happen, a new chapter break, right when we were at the high point of hostilities in Europe and everybody was worried about, well, everybody who pays attention to these things was worried about Putin or the West pushing the nuclear button, what happened? Iran, just out of the blue, launches their salvo of 200 ballistic missiles. Okay, now all attention is taken away from Europe. There's nobody. NAFO is crying right now because nobody is paying attention to those guys. All of a sudden, all of the attention right now is focused on Israel. When is Israel going to do their retaliation for Iran, which, as I've previously discussed, they really don't need to. They won the pissing contest already. They decapitated Hezbollah. They assassinated damn near everybody. They bombarded Lebanon, and they're about to put Lebanon into the Stone Age like they did Gaza. They don't need to attack Iran, but they're going to because they want a war. Now, Vladimir Putin is the intelligence nexus of all of this. Xi is likely the one running the show. Xi Jinping, the president of China, is likely the one running the show. But Vladimir Putin is the KGB expert, right? So he has all this intelligence. So I'm presuming that he knows that Israel is about to start a massive war with Iran. And so now we all of a sudden see this shift to the east. North Korea opens up that front. Well, what does this do? This relieves pressure against Iran because they know full well that the Americans know full well they can't fight a war on two fronts, much less four fronts. No matter how many nuclear submarines you have, you ain't fighting, and nobody wants to go nuclear, so they know it has to be conventional. You ain't fighting a war with the South Koreans and the North Koreans, the Taiwanese against the Chinese, the Iranians, and the entire axis of resistance versus Israel and Russia right now, who is crushing Ukraine. Okay, you can't fight a war on four fronts. You can barely fight a war on one front and win, especially with our lack of industrial capability. So they know full well that we're now seeing this maestro, whoever it is, Xi Jinping or Vladimir Putin, coordinate these hostilities. So it's like a game of whack-a-mole. So shit flares up here and it's on the brink of going nuclear. All of a sudden, attention now shifts to the east. Now, I don't know if this North Korean rhetoric is going to fizzle out. It very well may. Nonetheless, we have been reminded in the last 24 hours with this Operation Joint Sword, which simulated a blockade of Taiwan that's seen the largest, and I think the Chinese do this on purpose. They're increasing the size of these exercises on purpose. And I think one of these days, again, as my saying goes, there are no military exercises, only World War III disguises. One of these days, this exercise, when it's at sufficient size and scale, will actually be the real thing. And it will start off and it will seem like an exercise, but it will actually be the real thing. 153 aircraft detected, 17 warships, 17 Chinese Coast Guard warships, and 12 government vessels, okay, surrounding the entire island, which is a massive island, I should add. And of course, I think they had two aircraft carriers involved in this. So this was a massive operation, not counting all of the missile systems that they have here on the Chinese mainland trained on Taiwan. So all of these things are connected, and we really have to keep that in context. Is there going to be a retaliation by Israel against Iran in the next 48 hours? It starts to look like there probably is going to be. Mind you, we still don't know exactly, because at this point in time, it makes no sense for Israel to do this right now. Let's just get that straight. They are in a war with Gaza. They're in a war with Lebanon. They're in a war in the West Bank. They're in a war with Yemen and the Iranian militias in Iraq and Syria. The last thing they need is to provoke Iran. Like, from a logical point of view, from a logistical point of view, there is no way that they can fight a war on that many fronts, especially without the aid of the United States. Now, of course, everyone thinks that The Israelis are trying to bring the Americans into a state of war. And I think that's the only rational explanation at this point, because it makes no sense whatsoever for them to pursue this course of action when, as I stated yesterday, the Israelis have already won. They've proven themselves. They did the decapitation strike. They did the pager thing. They claim to have blown up a lot of Hezbollah's missiles. They claim to be kicking ass in southern Lebanon, even though Hezbollah is still alive and very well and pushing back. In fact, there's been some massive blunders by the IDF in recent days. So it starts to look like this global pariah, which they are becoming, and you're even having Europe now turn their back on Israel because they know what's coming. Europe knows if Israel starts a war with Iran, it's not going to affect Americans that much. It will, because the price of oil is globally traded, but it's going to affect Europe a hell of a lot more because Europe has no oil. It's also going to affect China a lot more. That's why Emmanuel Macron, with his nuclear weapons, is starting to say, you know what, screw this. Your plan to starve out 400,000 people in the northern part of the Gaza Strip if Hamas doesn't concede defeat is insane. Bombing hospitals with people strapped to IVs burning on camera is absolutely insane and psychopathic and genocidal. And the whole world can see it, barring a few crazy people here in North America who, you know, even a lot of people who were on Israel's side are starting to say, okay, like, this is irrational what you're doing. The extent that you're going to is irrational. Even if you're looking at it from a strictly militaristic point of view, these THAAD missiles defense system is not going to do a damn thing when Iran launches a volley of 2,000 missiles against you. Everybody knows this. And in fact, this guy right here, an Iranian official, is claiming, here's what he says. So the Russians win against Ukraine. Definitely. Here is what he said. Do you think that the Operation True Promise 3 will be executed in the future? True Promise 2 was when they launched the most recent salvo of missiles, 200. Okay, so 3 is ostensibly what comes after Israel launches their lauded retaliatory strike. Right now, America puppet Israel is fighting, he claims. Our allies are only fighting currently in this war. What do you think will happen if the Zionist regime attacks Iran's nuclear and oil facilities? He says, we have done a number of exercises to hit Israel's Dimona nuclear facility. Okay? We have a number of capabilities that is more powerful than nuclear weapons. What could those capabilities possibly be? Obviously, if they're talking about the Dimona nuclear facility, that is a Chernobyl situation in a country that's literally the size of Chernobyl, right? That oblast. So I don't know if that's the name of the oblast, but, you know, the contaminated area potentially would be very large, and it would have repercussions for the entirety of Israel. There would be a mass exodus out of the country. So this indeed is an ace in the hole that Iran has. Even if they don't have nuclear weapons, this, of course, would be a violation of 50 different Geneva conventions and would be a catastrophe in terms of public relations for Iran. But they could do it, right? Because the Dimona, here's the thing, guys. In the West, we've enjoyed the luxury of living above ground. Everything is above ground. Whereas in the East, in the heavily sanctioned East, they've had only one place to build, and that's underground. Whether it's Hamas, whether it's Hezbollah, whether it's Iran, whether it's North Korea, whether it's the tunnels of Moscow, Kamchatka Mountains complex, the underground, you know, nuclear survivable city that is in Russia, one of their nuclear subterranean complexes. The East is collectivist. They are traditionalist. They are hardcore religious, a lot of theocratic aspects. They're communistic. And all of these things are strengths when you're talking about fighting a war. Now, when times are good and fast money is everywhere, the individualism of the West prevails. The ingenuity, the creative spirit of the West prevails. But we're up against people who are still having babies, most of them. Well, with the exception of, you know, China birth rates are down, but that's more of a demographic thing because of the one China policy, residual effects of that. A lot of these countries are still very traditionalist. They're still very religious. And for all those reasons, they're far more willing to die for their cause than many people here, in fact, are. People here are willing to die for liberty, but that becomes such an obscure concept when you're trying to project power around the world and nobody's invaded you for the longest time. I mean, nobody's actually invaded North America. You know, granted, okay, the Russians invaded Ukraine, yes. There's a backstory there. Any historian can tell you that it's a complicated situation. It's not so cut and dry as a lot of the NAFO smooth brains would like us to believe. So if we decide to go up against this Eastern powerhouse of war boys who are willing to die for their cause, I love that scene in Mad Max 2. If you guys haven't seen Mad Max 2, this isn't much of a spoiler, but what's the guy's name? Not the Lord Humongous, the main villain who was in the first one. You know, these guys try to raid his compound, and he says, select one of my war boys. And so the guy selects one, and the guy kamikazes down, suicides himself, okay, and blows himself up on these guys. And that's just to signify the level of commitment of a lot of these societies. I'm not saying the Russians are going to be always like that, but, and even many, the Chinese, you know, there's going to be some resistance there, but by and large, because of their collectivist mindset, because of that traditionalism, that theocratic underpinning that, especially in Iran, not all Iranians, of course, because there's Western undertones of resistance emerging there as well. Nonetheless, what I'm saying is we're going to be spread far too thin if this shit goes down. Now, when he's talking about capabilities that are more powerful than nuclear weapons, what could he possibly mean? Is he talking about sleeper cells that could be activated because of all of the undeterred immigration that has occurred over the last 10, 20 years as a result, ironically, or unironically, of the mass immigration that's been forced and the refugees from previous wars? Are those sleeper cells going to be activated? Is he talking about something asymmetrical? Are they talking about cyber attacks? Are they talking about biological warfare? If Iran has the capability to create nuclear weapons, they likely have the capability to create viruses. I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm just saying it's something else for consideration. Are they talking about chemical? Okay, are they talking about dirty bombs? Because dirty bombs could be as or more damaging than an actual nuclear bomb for the long-term radiological effects. So this is a dangerous situation. Right now, Israel feels backed into a corner, increasingly more so, and I think this is why they diverted that aircraft carrier. I believe it's the USS Truman that was supposed to go into the Mediterranean and is now taking detour towards the North Sea and Spain. They're not saying why. They're saying because something ado, there's a malfunction or some kind of service call. Something is wrong with the ship, potentially. But it starts to look like the United States and even Joe Biden is saying, you guys need to back off a little bit. And I actually genuinely think that this conversation, usually I think it's good cop, bad cop, but I think now they're actually very concerned that Israel is about to go for broke and flip the entire table in the Middle East, because the only way they can win is if the United States goes to war. Now, they're saying that they're not going to attack the oil refineries and the nuclear facilities. That doesn't make a damn difference whatsoever. Because no matter what you do, Iran has said they're going to respond. And of course, when they respond for real, with Operation True Promise 3.0, as they're talking about in this interview, that's when Israel is going to say, okay, now we've been attacked. There's probably going to be loss of life. And now that is the flashbulb event that they need to galvanize the American military-industrial complex to come to their rescue. And all of this happens on the eve of the elections. We are living in crazy, crazy times. Now, I think that's, I went on a lot longer than I wanted to today. I think I got the point across here. Israel's also running out of interceptors, allegedly, and this is why Hezbollah has been able to get more drones in, because I've noticed that Israel is rationing their Iron Dome interceptors. So a lot of the times these rockets are falling in open fields, they're not very accurate. So the Iron Dome, instead of wasting an interceptor, they just ignore it and they let it fall and hit, which makes sense. But you would only, they've only started doing that more recently, as they've started to notice that their attritional rate is much higher than Hezbollah, allegedly, despite all of these wins that we're hearing about. Apparently, they're struggling. And of course, they don't have the production capacity at all to meet the demands, especially if the Chinese disconnect and Trump puts the 100% tariff on any country that doesn't want to trade in the petrodollar. I mean, if that happens, then we have to reindustrialize. That could take years, okay? So there's no way in hell. This is an Iranian oil facility that went up today, possible sabotage by Mossad agents. So we know that Mossad has its tentacles deeply embedded within Iranian society, because they were the ones who bombed Haniyeh's hotel room and they knew that he was going to stay there. So you know they have guys on the ground who can do things like this. So Iran is going to factor this into their retaliation of Israel's retaliation, regardless of whether this is an off-the-books attack. Because of course, Mossad and the IDF are going to say to Joe Biden and friends, they're going to say, well, you know, you told us not to attack directly oil refineries, but we could still do these covert ops, right? But all of this is going to be cumulative, especially when they do their big arrow attack that they're planning on doing. And according to a senior Israeli official, the targets for an Israeli retaliatory strike against Iran have been decided, and now it's only a matter of time. The suspension builds. The thing with Israel, though, is they didn't forewarn us about the pagers. They didn't forewarn us about the assassinations. They don't forewarn whenever they're going to do something important. So all of this buildup, it starts to look a little suspicious. It starts to actually look, are they going to do anything at all? Or are they the ones that are just hoping for a Pyrrhic victory and a limited Iranian response? Because they know full well that 48 THAAD interceptors ain't going to do shit, right? It's important for people to remember that back in June of 2022, and I distinctly remember talking about this at the time, I talked about this exercise that they were doing in one of my first daily updates where I used a screen. It was a really, you know, ragtag setup. Now, the Israeli Air Force simulated wide-scale strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. In addition to that, everything that we are seeing today, this is pre-October 7th, that the IDF claims they had no knowledge of, right? This is all of what we're seeing played out right now is essentially this simulation, this Chariots of Fire exercise that they did in 2022. Participated 100 aircraft, as well as Navy submarines. And this is essentially telling you what their plan is going to be. Then you have to add on top of this, the U.S. bomber fleet, which will be leveraged in order, because that's the only way they're targeting any Iranian nuclear facilities, is with nuclear weapons. And even then, it's not a sure thing. Nonetheless, just to remind people, this exercise was consisted of 100 aircraft as well as Navy submarines participated in the drill that spanned some 10,000 kilometers, simulating a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. And according to Channel 13 News, the U.S. Air Force was supposed to, and this is where it gets fishy, same kind of language as we're hearing now. According to Channel 13 News, the U.S. Air Force was supposed to serve as a complementary force with refueling planes during the drill. The IDF did not confirm the report, and the U.S. Central Command denied it, saying there is no direct blah, blah, blah U.S. military involvement in that exercise. A Pentagon spokesperson also denied the Department of Defense was directly participating in the drill, which we all know is complete and utter bullshit. The Israelis are using all American equipment. Okay, all the trainers and the advisors, and I'm sure at the highest levels, command and control, there's a lot of consultation going on between American generals for all this stuff. They are, of course, one of the biggest beneficiaries of American aid to the tune of $17 billion in 1 year. Okay? The Russians are also hammering Odessa's ports, but we don't hear about that anymore. They're saying that the amount of ballistic missiles that Russia is launching against Ukraine, and it's interesting, hey, how they don't send the THAAD missile defense system to Ukraine when you know they could benefit by intercepting these Iskander missiles. And maybe the Patriots are better at intercepting those. I don't know. Nonetheless, they're saying that there's 100 of these launched per month. And these are big-ass missiles. Okay, they're very expensive. They're also nuclear capable. But I think just in the last week alone, they've targeted several grain ships that allegedly are also transporting various weaponry. Okay, and of course, this is happening in Odessa, so it's very close to Romania and the Danube. So this is where you get that crossover of drones flying into Romanian airspace and talks of no-fly zones. I do think that we are going to see a flare-up of hostilities in Europe very soon once again. Things have calmed down as everybody anticipates this Israeli response, because of course, right now, the United States is tasked with playing a game of whack-a-mole, and North Korea has been activated. I do believe that there is collusion, and I think it's undeniable at this point that there's collusion between Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, and Xi Jinping has to play it cool, because they really are the powerhouse behind all of this. They are the economic powerhouse that is fueling all of this and allowing this axis to continue. They're the ones who are buying all the stuff from Russia and Iran. They're the ones who benefit from having the North Korean attack dog guard that part of the peninsula and act as a buffer between, you know, the encroachment of the West and the encircling of the West to try to contain China. North Korea is their main proxy, okay? So they're the nexus, but I do believe that Putin is the one who is kind of strategizing, okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to change the nuclear doctrine. We're going to put our ICBMs on rolling combat duty. Then Iran, you're going to light up Israel, okay? And that's going to stir shit up there for a while. And then we're going to take the attention off you by getting North Korea to start some shit over here. So then the United States is going to say, okay, hey, hold on, Israel, don't do this yet, because it looks like shit might be going down here. So we might have to send a couple more aircraft carriers over here. So this is a world war. It's increasingly becoming more so by the day. And this is why I talk about day X, because it's in the interest. None of these guys want a full-blown nuclear war. But what they're trying to do is attrit NATO and the United States and Israel via fighting a conventional war on multiple fronts by just keeping things escalating and edging in a nuclear sort of way in these various different theaters of conflict, never quite getting to that point. But if they are going to get to that point, everything's going to blow at once, because now the whole thing is rigged on the same circuit. So when North Korea pops, everything's going to pop. When Iran pops, Russia's going to pop. China's going to pop. Everything is wired to the same fuse, and that fuse is getting more tightly wound by the day, which is why you need to be prepping your ass off day in and day out while the getting is good. We got the planes. I believe we're on shipment 8 of 8 of the THAAD systems being delivered to Israel. I never thought they'd be so transparent about this shit. I mean, you know, it amazes me how little they can conceal. I was going to play this video the other day Essentially, it's people. These guys must have watched my video about how to scavenge in SHTF. You see, because most people are going to go for the front end of the supply chain. I always advise people, if you're going to loot, what you should never loot, because looting is bad, it's immoral, it's ethical, and as preppers, we never need to do that. But if you get put in a situation where you have no choice and your children are starving, go up the supply chain. Don't go to the retail stores. Go to the place where they store the stuff that supplies the retail stores. Mind you, there's probably going to be military guarding these places, but there's going to be less competition if there is no rule of law to enforce. And then you can even go further than that. You can go to the place where these things are manufactured. You know, you go to, like, let's take meat, for example. This is a great example. And I'll explain what's going on here in just a second, okay? Meat is a great example. Where does meat come from? It comes from cows, chickens, farmers' fields. That is the beginning. That's the mouth of the supply chain, where it all begins. But that's the last place that people are going to loot. Now, if you go trying to loot farmers, you know, cows and chickens, you're going to be on the other end of a barrel of a shotgun, I guarantee you. So don't tell them the Canadian prepper sent you. I'm just saying that most people aren't going to get wise to this until much later on, because people are going to start at the beginning of the supply chain. First, they're going to knock off all the stores, the 7-Elevens, convenience stores, then they're going to go to the grocery stores, then they're going to go to the consolidated food stores, then they're going to go to the shipping, like the trucks and the trains and the places where these things are manufactured, where meat is processed. Then they're going to get the bright idea. They're going to scratch their heads. They're going to be like, where does meat come from again? Oh yeah, it comes from the cows in the farmer's fields. Let's go hunt us some cows, because everything else has been hunted to extinction or pushed back into the forest so deep that we can't get to it. That's what's going to happen. And we're already seeing this Mad Max shit play out. People are looting train cars. I mean, this isn't really new, I guess. In fact, I think this happened just a few months ago where they were looting Amazon trains or something like that. I just found this, you know, I mean, this is where we're at. You know, they're getting wise. They're moving up the supply chain in terms of their looting and scavenging. And we're not even in SHTF yet. You know, the good thing about SHTF is people ain't going to be looting TVs because there's not going to be any place or power source to plug them into. The bad thing is that a lot of unprepared people are going to be doing a lot of desperate things. And if you think it's this bad for material and frivolous pursuits, wait until it's for something that you need to sustain life. We ain't seen nothing yet in this society. The collapse of Western society is going to make what's happening in the Gaza Strip seem like a walk in the park, where people cooperate, where people, by and large, support one another in a collectivist, theocratic society. Here, it's going to be dog eat dog in most cases. In most cases. Not in all rural environments where people, you know, you grew up with, get along. But, you know, when the chips are down, as the Joker would say. Anyways, guys, I got to get going. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah.